This is an ABC podcast. This is the WA Country Hour with Belinda Varischetti on ABC Radio WA.
And a very good afternoon to you. Today, new management at the Yeda Pastoral Company says rebuilding trust with local producers in the Kimberley is a top priority. We'll look at that in some detail a little later this hour after news headlines at 12:30. And shortly, heading to Esperance on the state's south coast, where a shipment of canola is being loaded and bound for China. It is a trial shipment at this stage and a pretty important one for the industry. This is the first time that canola has made its way to China since 2020. We'll look at that shortly here on the Country Hour on the ABC right across Western Australia. 12:06. Well, wild weather over the past few days has caused widespread damage across the state's agricultural region, with everything from extensive crop damage to some sheep being struck by lightning. Murray Hall farms in the Great Southern at Brookton, 130 kilometres east of Perth. He says the storm was building all day and in the afternoon it delivered.
Around just after four, it became very ominous and we then started to get some hail, and then that turned into rain, and then that turned into rain and hail, and it just fell. And yeah, unbelievable.
How much did you get in total?
So across the farms, it's varied. Like out east, it's 30 mil to, on our western boundary, 67's the highest. And there was some recordings in town, 50 to, again, 67 was another one there. Plus the hail banked up against the side of the house, you know, 200-300 mil high up the walls in some cases. We were driving a truck out through to the farm and, I thought the windscreen was coming in.
Really? It was that big?
Yeah, so size of lupins horizontally coming at us, and it was just that loud. Unbelievable.
And when it came through, was it a really big burst or was it a lot of rain over a long period of time?
Look, it was all over in about an hour and a half, I would have thought.
You've been out this morning assessing the damage from yesterday. Tell me a little bit about what you've seen this morning.
So last night, just at twilight, we went and looked at some canola and land north of town, and the extensive damage there, you know, the seeds all on the ground. Yeah, hard to know exactly. I haven't been back there this morning. I've got staff checking fences for floodways and so on for stock, making sure they're all secure. So that's first priority. Now just getting to climbing a few fences into the crops. And I've seen some 100% canola damage to, you know, 10% on the other side of the same paddock. Barley, I've did a couple of bonnet counts, picking up plants 50 to 80% in areas, and most of it's, close to 50%, I would have thought.
No, I'm sorry to hear that, Murray. I mean, you mentioned you've also checked first priority is livestock. What do they look like?
Well, two didn't survive too well. A direct hit with lightning, I'd suggest, by the way they're laying in the paddock. But look, they're pretty wet, and they were looking for a feed this morning. But we've had very good pastures and they're in very good condition. But, yeah, like I said, those good pastures, noticed some of the clover burr was washed into one of the dams this morning. It could have been some erosion had it been a little later in the season. Luckily, the cover's there.
Have you guys started harvest at yours?
No, very close, very close. Monday was when we were kicking off, so, yep.
So this means probably that timing is going to be pushed back a little bit, I assume?
Oh, look, it'll dry out reasonably quickly, especially canola. You know, we'll just go once the moisture's done. So potentially mid-next week, I reckon, we'll be going again. You know, it's dried off now, it's warm, even, but it's overcast, so breeze up and it'll go again soon.
And have you got the insurance companies coming out today to assess your areas as well?
Well, I've spoken to our insurer and, they'll contact the assessing teams and, we'll be dealing with that in the next few days, which will be extensive.
Yeah, I imagine so. Because have you guys at your place in Brookton, have you ever experienced hail damage like this before? Or is it kind of the first time you're dealing with it?
Never had a hail claim before. I've had large fire claim in the past, but no,
well,
never have.
I did hear the Bureau say this morning that it is the most amount of rain that has fallen in Brookden since, I think it was 2017. They're still waiting for that to be confirmed. But would you agree with that, do you think, the amount you saw yesterday?
In a single event, yeah, I'd agree with that.
And are you expecting any more coming up over the next couple of days?
To be honest, I haven't really looked at the forecast. And it builds up and looks like it could rain again. And then the cloud's fairly high again at the moment, so... No, I just don't know.
Murray, I mean, that's your farm that we're talking about there and the damage you've seen there. You mentioned to me earlier you've also driven through town. What did town look like?
So, like I said, it was when I drove through, it was, flooding up. We were driving along just at a slow pace and the water was coming up over the bonnet off the front wheels of the ute. And
this was yesterday afternoon, sorry.
This was yesterday afternoon, correct. The roadhouses were flooded right across. The drains through town were the grates were all lifted up out and were just, water was coming up out of the drainage system. It was getting pressure that so much. The hairdressing salon, it looked like it was above the sill of the door. So I'd imagine there's water going across their floors. And there's a bit of erosion around the rower line there. The lights were flashing. Obviously, there were shorts out. There was possibly a direct hit on one of the transformers in town. The fire brigade was sitting nearby there with that all smouldering. So, yeah, there was a bit going on.
And what about this morning? Have you had a chance to drive through this morning and have a look?
Yeah, so I didn't get through to go to the East Farm until a little later, around probably 7:30, and I think the Shire had been out very busy early, and the drains and that were all sort of had dried away. But the evidence is still there, like I said, that scarring around the railway line and so on. So, and I guess the roadhouses have worked hard to get it all cleaned up around their pumps.
Brookden farmer Murray Hall speaking to Kate Forrester. 12 past 12 here on the Country Hour. Keen to hear from you this afternoon too. If you got some of that rain, if you've got some of that hail damage, what is the story at your place? Text through 0448 922 604. Further east, Lee Strange grows grain at his farm at Bruce Rock, 240 kilometres east of Perth. He's also been out in his paddocks this morning assessing the hail damage to his canola crops. He says it's been a frantic week.
Yeah, it's been a bit hectic the last couple of days. Obviously, we've been watching the forecast fairly closely and, you know, it's not unusual for this time of the year to get some pretty interesting weather. So, yeah, unfortunately, we sort of copped a couple of thunderstorms and over Tuesday and Wednesday. And, yeah, we're sort of just assessing the fallout from that as we speak.
So was it rain that just fell, Lee, or are you talking hail too?
Yeah, rain and hail. We had a thunderstorm, which was fairly localised on Tuesday afternoon on the home farm, which had a pretty nasty strip of hail through it, which affected some canola. And then, yesterday afternoon, it obviously brewed up again and we had more hail through probably at most of the farm. Got some sort of hail with those storms that went through on the western side of the farm.
So that's two separate hail events across 2 days, right?
Yeah, that's right. The thunderstorms were forecast and it's, you'll hear farmers use the phrase storm lotto a fair bit. And that's unfortunately what it is. You know, everyone gets their turn at some point and... We just happened to be under the cloud the last couple of days, and the rain we had was probably between 15 and 25 mils across the farm, I'd guess. I know there's a lot of guys further east, east of Meriden, that had a lot more rain, so they probably were affected more than us from a rainfall point of view, and I know there's certainly guys that have had similar hail issues around the joint from what I've heard. So, yeah, it's just that time of the year, and we're all trying to start harvest and get a bit done, and yeah, these little hold-ups obviously are pretty frustrating and a little disheartening, but that's the game we're in.
You mentioned, Lee, you're out at the moment as we speak checking the damage. What are you seeing?
Yeah, checking, the rain hasn't done a lot of damage. It came down very quickly at home, and apart from overflowing a few gutters and washing a few tracks out, that was about it. But, yeah, just assessing the hail damage, mainly on canola at the moment. I haven't had a look at some lupins yet, but, yeah, it was sort of... it just varies so much, and it's hard to get a figure on it. It'd be anywhere from 10% to 90% in certain strips where it's been absolutely smashed. But, yeah, that's what we're trying to go through at the moment.
And is it to the extent where you've had to lodge something with an insurance company?
Yes, we have. Because the hail on Tuesday was fairly isolated to one part of the property, we had actually lodged a claim, and quite ironically, and had to have a bit of a chuckle, my wife sent me a video of the storm at home with the hail and the rain yesterday afternoon, whilst the assessor was actually trying to ring me for the claim the day before. So when I rang her back, I said, we were just put the brakes on it for a minute and assess everything, because there'll be more.
So Lee, have you started harvest at Bruce Rock yet, like at your property?
Yes, we have. Yes, we've done some barley and we're doing some oats at the moment. Our canola wasn't quite ready to go when we'd started, so we decided to start on a few other crops just to get the wheels turning.
So you've pulled up, obviously, now, though?
Yes, we have, yeah. Look, if the sun could come out and the wind can stay up, that would be a great help. It's just drizzling from the south here at the moment, unfortunately, blowing up from the south. So it's not ideal drying conditions right at the moment, but the weather's expected to clear up now. So hopefully if the sun can come out and this breeze can stay up, who knows? Yeah, whether we get going tomorrow or Saturday, I'm not sure yet, but we'll just assess it as we go along.
Lee Strange, a grain grower near Bruce Rock, speaking to Kate Forrester about the damage he's been assessing this morning on his farm from the hail that's fallen over the last couple of days. 16 past 12. Well, about 50 kilometres north of Bruce Rock, hail has destroyed crops near Meriden in the eastern wheat belt. Agronomist David Keamy says some farms in the region got as much as 80 millimetres of rain.
Yeah, everyone sort of experienced a little bit of rain, but anywhere from sort of 7 mil to 80 plus, and a bit of hail with it as well. And some areas, or well, some little cells, if you like, were really bad, and others smattering. I think probably the main thing that saved us was the little bit of rain we had the day before, and that has toughened up a lot of the wheat and barley that's yet to go, and even some of the canola. So it didn't have that major effect on that, but it's still going to be really hard to find because there are pods missing, and it's of course it's mainly affected all those earlier crops, the canola, the lupins, and the oats. Where it was bad, it's really bad, and yeah, it's just so widespread. And we're no orphans in Meriden, obviously. Looking at the radar, the proper one, at least we got that Doppler one in Doodlakine, so we could really pinpoint where everything was. Not that you can do anything about it, of course.
Yeah, and as you were saying, Dave, you were watching the radar and that system come across, and it was just sort of a spattering here and there. And then going out and visiting those corresponding farmers this morning, are there some paddocks that have been, you know, unharvestable now?
Most certainly, there'll be some big write-offs, but yeah, the assessors are going to definitely have a task.
Yeah, big job ahead of them. And as you say, it wasn't just the hail that fell, but there's also been up to 80 mil of rain, and a lot of those crops in the eastern wheat belt don't have the sprouting tolerance that maybe some farmers on the south coast are growing. How are you expecting the crops that haven't been destroyed, that are still harvestable, how are you expecting that they'll recover?
Today's nice and overcast, which isn't good, and no wind. Tomorrow, hopefully, the wind will pick up a little bit, and next week looks like it's, you know, high 20s, 30, and hopefully a bit of wind. So generally I've found over my time with, you know, falling numbers and sprouting, and it's usually the second or the third rain that sort of happens. So, yeah, there was not too much absolute devastation, and hopefully by Monday when it's breezing again, we'll be back in the harvest.
Meriden-based agronomist David Keamy speaking to Tara de Landgraaf. 19 past 12, and I was having a look at the WA Wheatbelt Rainfall Reports Facebook page, and a photo there from Tristan, South Barrakoppen, and it's a photo of a crop. It looks like there's a lake basically running through the middle of the crop, and the dog in the photo there standing leg deep, so the water coming up to his belly by the looks of this photo, at South Barrakoppen. Obviously, we'll go through the rainfall figures for you just after the news headlines at 12:30 today, 12:20 here on the Country Hour. Well, even a couple of hundred kilometres north of Meriden, the rain has interrupted harvest. Cathy Cook farms at Mollerin, about 280 kilometres northeast of Perth. They started harvest last week, but the rain has put a stop to it this week.
We started on oats just over a week ago, and we finished our oat program and we started on canola a couple of days ago, only to get the wet weather to pull us up.
Now, how's it been looking? Because when I was here back in July, things were looking very promising then. Has it carried through?
It's been quite a mixed bag. We're about 50 mils rainfall difference between the north and the south of the property. Currently, we're harvesting at the southern end and things are looking quite good down there. Oats were going quite nicely, and the canola, from the small indication we had from when we started, looked quite promising as well.
And you had a bit of excitement yesterday with lightning, was it yesterday?
Yes, correct. We had a phone call from our son to say he'd seen smoke, and fortunately we headed straight towards it. It was at our neighbours actually, and it was very close to their beautiful pile of freshly made hay. Lightning strike, and fortunately everyone got there really quickly and were able to get the fire out before it got into the hay.
Now, you've been on a few group chats today and hearing all kinds of weather reports. What have you been hearing from people?
Yes, friends at Kellerberrin had 80-90% loss in some of their canola, and huge rainfall reports to the south. Yeah, I saw footage at Wickapin and Beverley of dams overflowing and so forth. So it's just, yeah, heartbreaking for those people.
Is it enough to spoil the grain at this stage?
I'm not too sure. I've from last year's experience with falling numbers, I think we needed a few rainfall events to cause sprouted grain. But I think with heavy downpours where you get flash flooding and also hail, I think you obviously receive damage that way. Fortunately for insurance, I just hope people are compensated that way. Flash flooding, I'm not so sure what happens in that situation.
So we're a fair way north in this, as far as the grain belt is concerned. What are you hearing from your northern neighbours about the way the season's gone for them?
I think everyone's reasonably happy, although further west, a few people still haven't commenced harvest yet. I know Wathaurou, I've got friends on the chat there that they haven't started yet, so don't think there's a lot known about the quality yet. So I guess we've got a few weeks to find out how things are going to sit.
It's quite a reversal from the normal sequence that Esperance got going so early. And
yes, we're normally onto wheat by now. We're normally well into the wheat by the 6th of November. So we're very late. So, yeah, it'll be interesting.
But it's the kind of soft finish that you were hoping for?
It is, yes. We did have some 38, 37 degree days snuck in there, which I think did come a little prematurely and possibly have done a little bit of damage. And again, I think it's mainly the wheat that suffered. So when we get onto the wheat, we'll really see the impact.
So if you get a fine run, how many more weeks are you going to be seeing the inside of a header?
January, well into January. Yes, we'll have a quiet Christmas and quiet New Year, and I think we'll still be going early January, which is fine. I'll happily keep harvesting into January.
Mullerin grain producer Cathy Cook speaking to Mark Bennett. 12:23.
You're part of the Country Hour with Belinda Varischetti on ABC Local Radio WA.
A shipment of canola bound for China is currently loading at the port of Esperance on the state's south coast. It is the first time that Australian canola will be making its way to China since 2020, when concerns over the fungal disease blackleg were flagged. The vessel Ammonia A docked in Esperance yesterday and is set to load 65,000 tonne and then head to Qingdao in northeast China's Shandong province. Pat O'Shaughnessy is CEO at Grain Trade Australia and says the trial shipment is a positive sign for the industry.
What we understand is that the Australian government and China authorities have been in sorts of negotiations around canola, And, you know, with that ship appearing on the stem there, it would look that there's been some progress there, I guess. And what we're hearing is that this is under a trial basis. So what that says to us is that we need to make sure that things are done very well and we don't get too far ahead of ourselves. But if the trial becomes successful, then hopefully that may lead to more market access if you know, it comes to that.
Now, the trade was halted in 2020 due to concerns over the fungal disease blackleg. What's happened since then?
To be honest, that's really a matter for the government. I think that those are the sorts of things that biosecurity and quarantine issues is what the government are responsible for with any country. So, yeah, I'm not too sure on the precise details, but just with that ship appearing on the stem there, you know, you've just got to join the dots, I suppose, and assume that there's been some progress made.
And we're certainly seeing on the MyCor website, which is obviously run by DAF, that there's a raft of new phytosanitary requirements. I suppose that is really a big part of export with any country, but China in particular.
I wouldn't single out China at all, actually. Every country's, and Australia is very particular about this, about its biosecurity requirements for bringing anything into its country, and every country's involved in that discussion. What people don't or should understand is that before we can export any grain to any country anywhere in the world, that there is a process where the two governments need to reach agreement about the biosecurity and quarantine issues around that. So that's really the process that's been going on here as well from what we can see on canola.
Pat, once you lose a trade or a customer or, I suppose, a country really, how hard is it to get them back?
Negotiation process around biosecurity and quarantine, it doesn't move as fast as technology, for example, these days. So once you do lose access, it is very difficult to get it back. It's important that as an industry and as supply chain operators and as growers that we are conscious of the biosecurity issues, you know, for that reason as well as the other reasons. But yes, it's much easier to keep it than it is to try and get it back.
This is potentially a trial of, well, I suppose different sources have said there may be three trials. Others have said potentially five trials. Who gets involved in a trial like this? Who's involved?
Well, these cargoes, as I said, the government would be involved in the negotiation with the Chinese authorities as to what are those phytosanitary issues and how that's going to work. And then once that's happened, then it's really the role of the commercial operators, the exporters, to execute the shipments in accordance with those requirements.
And we understand that this cargo in particular, owned by CBH Grain, heading to China to a port that's run by COFCO Oils, around 65,000 tonne aboard the Ammonia A, set to sail later this week. Is this a sign that the trade has resumed or will resume, Pat?
Well, as you said, it's from what we understand, it's a trial shipment. So by definition, a trial's a trial. So you need to execute that and then make sure that the requirements that were there under that trial were adhered to, and that all sides are comfortable with that. And then it's, again, another matter for the government to continue those negotiations with the other country to work out how to go forward from that point.
Now, Australia hasn't been exporting canola to China for around 5 years now. How important are they really to Australian farmers if that's the case, if we're still being able to export significant amounts without them for the last 5 years?
Having more demand in a market is a good thing for growers, and it's about the aggregate demand that we can build for the commodities is also the important thing. So having more demand for canola is going to be good for canola growers. The China market for Australia in just about any industry that you look at, but in particular for grains, is very important and very long-standing. And so being able to have stronger trade and broader trade, I think, is a good thing, and making sure that the trade relationships remain mutually beneficial, and that as an exporting side of the equation, make sure that we are delivering on the expectations and the requirements of our customers. And that's important no matter where you are. So you know, China, as I said, it's an important market for the Australian grains industry and the oilseeds industry. And if we can get that market access back and that trade flowing again, that'll be significant for both Australia and for China.
Is the industry sort of holding its breath a little here, Pat, while you wait for it to play out and see what happens?
The role of the grain trader is to manage risk. And, you know, this is just another example of risk that's been managed for grain that's going anywhere in the world. So, in a sense, holding its breath, but I think in other ways it's sort of business as usual type of thing. It's what they do every day is manage risk and executing grain into all parts of the world.
When do you expect you'll know if the shipment has been a success and maybe there are, you know, more shipments to come, the trade will resume as normal?
I think that's really a matter for the Australian government and for the Chinese authorities as they sit down and work that through. So it's very difficult to know these things. As we sort of said, these trade and market access issues don't often move very fast. They're quite technical. We'd be foolish to get too far ahead of ourselves. That's the first point. But if we can fulfil the requirements and maintain those relationships with customers, of course it's a good thing for Australian growers. You know, so getting more demand in the market is important, but we should also not lose sight that we need to make sure that this is mutually beneficial for both sides. So we good for Australian growers and, you know, also good for the canola industry in China in terms of its oil, its protein and the demand for protein in China. And we need to make sure that we keep visibility on both sides of the equation and make sure that we're delivering for customers, because otherwise we're just doing transactions. We're not really developing long-term trade.
Pat O'Shaughnessy is the CEO of Grain Trade Australia. He was speaking to Tara de Landgraaft about that shipment of canola. It's right now being loaded at the port of Esperance, being loaded with that canola, around about 65,000 tonnes of it, and bound for China, which is going to be the first shipment of canola to China since 2020. 28-1 here on the Country Hour. Jonathan Hopper is in the studio with the news headlines.
Good afternoon, Belinda. The WA Firefighters Union president says there is no middle ground in its pay dispute with the state government. Last night, union members voted overwhelmingly to reject a second enterprise bargaining agreement offered by the government. The union is demanding a $2 pay rise from their current rate of $38 an hour, but the state government says it has no plans to reconsider its position. Independent MP Monique Ryan has labelled the federal government timid and opaque after it pushed its proposed freedom of information laws through the lower house without debate. The legislation has been widely criticised for claims it would make FOI laws harder to use and more restrictive. It's unlikely to pass the upper house. And Australia cricket captain Pat Cummins has dismissed concerns that selectors are not planning for the future. Former captain Steve Waugh has criticised the chairman of selectors, George Bailey, for not making hard decisions. With the current bowling lineup all in their mid to late 30s, there's fears the team could lose experienced players in a rush. Thanks, Belinda.
Thank you for the update, Jonathan. Appreciate that. 27-1.
The Country Hour with Belinda Varaschetti on ABC Local Radio WA.
Still to come, we'll see what the new owners of the Yida Pastoral Company and the Kimberley Meat Company have in mind for the future, and then heading to Mount Barker for the results of the cattle market just before the news at 1. Right now, calling into the Bureau of Meteorology, Joey Rawson is with you this afternoon. Joey, we've been talking about all the rain, in some places some hail that's fallen, well, in the last 24 hours to 9 o'clock this morning, and causing quite a bit of damage to some crops, particularly in that sort of eastern wheat belt region. What is the situation today across the Southwest Land Division? Does any of that continue?
Yeah, so that activity has moved out to the east, Belinda, so it could impact the far southeast of the state, so places like Forrest and Eucla. Maybe in the next kind of 2 to 3 hours may get a thunderstorm, which could have some hail or some damaging winds. But for the Southwest Land Division, the good news is that we're on a kind of a drying pattern. We do have a fair bit of cloud over the Southwest Land Division at the moment, and there's still a couple of showers out of that. But that cloud is going to contract to the south coast. The sun will start shining. And by the time we get to tomorrow, central wheat belt and kind of northern parts of the Great Southern will certainly be dry, and once we're into the weekend, it's going to be quite sunny and starting to warm up, which I'm assuming will be good for harvesting. But as we track early into next week, we start seeing a trough develop near the west coast, so there is a bit of potential for thunderstorms to develop kind of in the northern parts of the central wheat belt, but it's only a small chance, and it is in the far northern parts. So there is a bit of a window coming up for kind of drier and warmer conditions through the southwest land division, with the caveat that there's going to be a couple of showers along the south coast, and that's going to persist for a number of days, but not expecting much rain in those showers along the south coast, Belinda, as we track forward.
And then for northern and eastern parts of the state, what have you got?
Yeah, so as I mentioned, we do have some storms that are moving to the south interior and the eastern parts of the Eucla at the moment. We are closely monitoring these storms. They potentially could be severe in the next few hours, so keep an eye on the Bureau's website. And then we've got some storms also developing in the central parts of the Kimberley. The Kimberley are going to get storms persisting for at least the next week, but those storms, as we get to the weekend, are going to start to move through the interior and eastern parts of the Pilbara, and even pushing into the Gascoyne by Sunday and extending nearly to the west coast on Monday. So storms through the Kimberley, all the way through the interior, and then, pushing through the Gascoyne to nearly get into Geraldton. And that's going to be kind of the case as we track forward into next week, with storms over a broad part of the north of the state. So that's probably where the activity is going to be as we move forward, Belinda.
All right. Thank you for going through those details, Joey. Appreciate that. It is 24-1 here on the Country Hour. Let's check the rainfall figures now. And this is a look back over the last 24 hours to 9 o'clock this morning, and checking 5 mils and over. We'll start in northern and eastern forecast districts. In the Kimberley, Gogo Station 10, Truscott 7, Udiella 13. In the Gascoyne, Kirkalocka 10, Paynes Find 20. The Goldfields, Edgedina 9, Kalgoorlie Boulder 5, and Norseman Aero 13. Eucla had 10 and Eyre had 8. Then moving into the Southwest Land Division, for the Central West, Alanuka 15, Arradale 48, Badgingarra 10, Ballandane 14, Bindi Bindi 37, and Bindi Bindi North 19. Balgada 10, Canna had between 14 and 17, Canterbury 6, Chapman Valley 18, Coolangatta 15 to 22, Dootawar 15, Eridu 12 to 14, Arangi Springs 25, Urati 5, Kalgoorlie Airport between 8 and 15, that should be Geraldton, had between 8 and 15. Greengrove 5, Gutha West 11, Durian Bay had between 2 and 16, Kalbarri 8, Mingenew 19, Moaska 10, Morawa Airport between 12 and 13, Mullawar 15 to 20, Nabawar 16, Nambung Station 8, New Norcia between 14 and 16, North Island 6, Perenjori had between 8 and 11, Port Denison 15, South Homewood 21, Strawberry 17, Tabletop 23, Tardin Hill 13, Three Springs between 9 and 10, Tibraden 11, Wandana had 6, Yandanooka 13, and Yuna had between 5 and 9 in the gauge. In the Lower West, just dwelling up, 5. To the Southwest, Acton Park 10, Beetle Up 12, Bunbury 6, Cape Lewin 11, Cape Naturalist 16, Carlotta 11, Kawaram Up 8, Four Acres 8, Happy Valley Alert 5, Jindong 10, Carradale 11, Logbrook 14, Manjimup 12, Margaret River 5, Main Up South 7, Million Up 12, Northcliff 31, Quinnan Up 15, Rosabrook 7, Scott River 11, Shannon 27, Tonebridge 15, Walpole Forestry 29, Warner Glen 10, Willyabrup 8, Windy Harbour 25, Yanmar 16, and Yungarilup 8. Southern Coastal Region, Albany Airport 14, Bremer Bay 13, Chain Beach 5, Denmark 10, Gardiner 6, Jacup 11, King River 12, Many Peaks 8, Mount Barker 14, Munglinup between 5 and 8, Narrakup West had 10, and that was over 2 days, Oakmarsh Farm 5, Ongerup between 7 and 9 mils, Stirling South 10, Tamar 12, The Duke 5, Wellstead 5. Moving to the Central Wheat Belt, Ardeth 8, Belka East 15, Beverley 14, Barrackuppin South 10, Kodgkodgin 10, Doodlakine 7, Hinds Hill 22, Caliberan 9 to 16, Meriden 17, Mount Hardy 5, Nanginan 21, Narrabeen Aero 11, Quaritting Airport 6, Redlands 31, Westonia 17, Waiyelki 16 over 2 days, York had between 2 and 12, York Rakine 9. In the Great Southern, Brookton 46, Boolyee 7, Colorado 10, Cranham 9, Franklin between 11 and 18, Highbury East 26, Hillcroft 32, Holt Rock 13, Cookeran 13, Quita 8, Lake King 7, Newdigate between 9 and 10, Pingilly West 29, Pingerup 8, Tunney 12, Wickapen 5 to 7, and Yillering East had 11. This is the Country Hour on the ABC, right across Western Australia, streaming live on the web and on the ABC Listen app. Well, new management at the Yeada Pastoral Company says rebuilding trust with local producers in the Kimberley is a top priority. Last Friday, it was confirmed the Canadian investment fund, Alberta Investment Management Corporation, or AIMCO, is the new owner of Yeada and the Kimberley Meat Company. The Kimberley Meat Company, or KMC, was the only abattoir in northern WA until it closed last year amid animal welfare concerns and millions of dollars in unpaid debts, a major blow for the state's northern cattle industry. Yugawalla Pastoral Company's general manager, Hayden Sale, is now overseeing operations across a number of stations owned by AIMCO. He says now the sale has been finalised, they're keen to work with the community to rebuild trust.
Yeah, look, we were very aware that a lot of local suppliers and contractors had lost significant sums of money to the previous ownership. Unfortunately, it was in so much trouble and debt that most people lost those sums of money, and we're aware of that. So what we've committed to do is, and we've had meetings early on in the piece to say this, that anyone who was a previous supplier that is in that space is going to get preferential treatment going forward to get the work on anything to do with Yeada, which we've already done with a lot of the contractors since we've been back in there getting the property back in order, and KMC the same. So we'll have more meetings with creditors and people that have been disadvantaged by that, and we're going to make sure that we do that going forward. And then on beyond that, I think the important thing to understand is that Yugawalla itself, even being a large pastoral company, is going to be nowhere near being able to supply the numbers of cattle that we need to make this viable. So we're hoping over time we rebuild that trust with the local pastoral community to return to supplying KMC and make sure it's absolutely on commercial terms. We're not asking for any favours. We're just saying if you can give us a go, then hopefully we can build a strong, sustainable abattoir for the Northwest.
What's the first priority for the team now that it has settled?
On the station front, we've been helping oversee the mustering process through the administrators, which has had to happen for the way it's been structured, but now it comes under our full control. So we're rounding out the mustering season. The station was in a reasonably run-down state. We've had to destock large numbers of cattle off it, and we've also put quite a significant amount of infrastructure in to make sure the cattle that were left behind are in good order, being fencing and water points and other related infrastructure. So we're just going to continue on with that for the next couple of years to keep building it back up to its potential, basically, on the station front.
Running all of these stations at once sounds like it's going to be a huge effort. How are you planning to manage everything?
So we've got a really good executive team from an office here in Broome. Justin Morrissey came on as our chief operations officer at the start of this year because we were seeing that the group was growing rapidly and needed a bit of help in that space. And we've also got his wife, Glenda, has come as our chief pilot. So we're adding to our sort of ability to run the bigger group all the time. So we're confident we'll be able to absorb the stations into our current system, and then the Meatworks has its own executive team and management team that will run that, so that doesn't come under our banner as such or our responsibility, but we'll obviously be working very closely with them to make sure that all the things that we need to do to back up the Meatworks and supply cattle to it, not just supply cattle but at the right time, because we're building a feed yard at Shamrock Station as well that can grow fodder, so that will help fill in the shoulder periods of when the cattle get hard to get, which is very early in the year in the wet season, and very late in the year when most of the trading and selling of cattle's done. So the key role for Yigawala will be to try and fill those shoulders a bit, and then we'll be in the marketplace buying from the broader pastoral community, which is great for the northwest and the pastoralists in the north generally.
You mentioned having to put some work into improving facilities. Are you planning to expand as well?
We will just, what we do across the rest of the stations, anywhere there's capacity to grow, the ability to run cattle, we do development on that, being mainly water points and fencing and yard infrastructure and roads and stuff. So we'll continue that at Yeda. Yeda had a very large number of cattle on it because it had been not really managed in the years towards the end of its previous ownership. So there was many more cattle than what we thought, which has resulted in overstocking issues there. We've reduced the numbers dramatically to allow the country to recover, and then we'll put in the infrastructure around those cattle to be able to sustainably run them going forward. So that's the challenge with Yoda, to give a good enough spill and then get it back to a sustainable cattle number in the next few years. And then the broader group's doing that as well. But that plays into the making sure that KMC is successful, because we're going to have cattle right there that we can take to works. And then we're going to be also supplying cattle out of our feed yard and irrigation. So hopefully with being able to fill those shoulder periods and keep that works open for the bulk of the year, it gives us an advantage over what traditionally happened in the past, where they try and operate when the cattle are available in your traditional northern mustering system, which might be May till October. We can fill that to make sure the works stays open, which is pretty key to it being long-term viable. You have to, they're basically a factory. You have to keep them full all the time so that the staff are employed all the time. They're running at their maximum capacity, so your cost per unit to go through it is right. All those things we're hoping we can help contribute to with Yigawala to make sure that it has every chance of success.
Yigawala General Manager Hayden Sale, who's also overseeing operations at Yeda and Mount Jarralenga stations. And it's a big patch that he covers. It's an area roughly 3 million hectares and 120,000 head of cattle. 13 to 1 here on the Country Hour. And as far as a timeline to resuming meat processing in northern Western Australia, the Kimberley Meat Company's new CEO, Peter Phelan, says they're aiming to reopen the abattoir by 2027. And he too is keen to sit down with producers and repair relationships.
We want to be a part of the community. We want to be in there working with you, understanding that we have some trust that we need to build back into the community. We're going to do that. We're going to be knocking on people's doors and, as I said, having cups of teas at kitchen tables, just so we can build those relationships again. We're really excited by the prospect of being back up in the Kimberley and working.
The Kimberley Meat Company's been out of action for a little while now, and it's been a big loss for local producers. How much of a priority is it getting KMC back online?
Oh, it's a major priority. We are really invested in ensuring that we come back online and that we give back to the community. We see the business as a very important part of the community, both economically and from a community standpoint, where we're employing local people. So it's really, really important to us.
What needs to happen to get it going again?
We've got to do some major infrastructure upgrades, I suppose. And I suppose one of the first things that we're going to be building is a new render plant. The facility has never had a render plant, so that's a fairly substantial capital outlay to the business. That's going to take around 12 months to build. One of the other projects we're going to be doing is we're going to be giving the wastewater treatment plant an upgrade as well. And through that process, we'll be able to make sure that we're putting clean water, if you like, I suppose, from in the plant back out onto suitable irrigated property land. We're also going to be going through both the kill floor and the bone-in room and looking at the infrastructure in there and giving those pieces of equipment an upgrade as well.
How long will it take to reopen?
We're shooting for 2027 to have that happening, but we will potentially start around the back end, potentially October of 2026, to have things in place and going. It'll be a soft start where we just ramp up slowly as we go. obviously the plant hasn't run for 18 months, so we're going to have to go through quite methodically, check all the equipment, make sure it's the standard, meeting the standards it needs to, both from a hygienic production and from an environment perspective as well, and making sure we're ticking all the right boxes.
What would you say to local cattle producers who are hoping this change might mean a new chapter for KMC?
Oh, most definitely. I'm super keen to go and talk with the producers and sit down with them and have a cup of tea at the table and talk about what we can do. We want to be revenue partners alongside of them and value add to their business so that we're not just taking cattle and processing them and taking the price. We want to show them how we can build businesses together and be a sustainable part of our business. I think the future of the beef industry is bright. I think it's a fabulous region and I think it's an untapped region. I think building and bringing back KMC into the region will give the producers another revenue stream that they can look at, not just currently go down the road they're currently going on. And the other side of that too, I suppose, Jess, is we want to work probably 46 weeks of the year. We're not going to turn off at 32 or 42. We are going to be gathering cattle potentially from feed yards around the place and bringing them into the system so that we can continue to run all year round.
Kimberley Meat Company Chief Executive Peter Phelan, he was speaking to Jess Baker about the plans going forward for the Kimberley Meat Company. And, well, the plan is at this stage to reopen the abattoir by 2027. And just what they've got in mind for the future too, with the new owners just confirmed last week that Canadian investment fund Alberta Investment Management Corporation, or AIMCO, is the new owner of Yeada Pastoral Company and also the Kimberley Meat Company, and just going through what they see as the future. 9 minutes to one here on the Country Hour. Shortly we'll get to Mount Barker and go through the details of the yarding and the prices at the cattle market today. First, though, the Galati Group's $14 million deal to purchase two of WA's southwest apple orchards has been welcomed by the peak industry body, Vegetables WA. On the Country Hour yesterday, Galati Group CEO Frankie Galati and his dad, Tony, revealed they're the new owners of an orchard managed by Redland Fruit and owned by an investment firm, and Guadagnino Orchards, both at Manjimup. The orchards produce a wide range of fruit, including Pink Lady, Royal Gala, Granny Smith and Golden Delicious apples. But there's also pears, cherries, stone fruit and avocados on those orchards. The investment is aimed at securing supply for the company's retail stores, the Spud Shed supermarkets. Vegetables WA CEO Peter Spackman says the deal is unlikely to have a major impact on the wider industry.
I don't think it should impact them at all. Like, again, they're already producing the produce anyway. Obviously, it's just under a different ownership, so it shouldn't create any greater competition or a change in marketplace, I wouldn't imagine.
The Galati Group already grows, packs and sells much of its own produce through Spudshed stores. Does this level of vertical integration strengthen WA's food security, or could it create some challenges for market diversity?
I think it can only help it. Food security is about ensuring that there is a continual supply of food and produce going into the marketplace. And once you get to a scale and the opportunity that the Galatis have to invest in their organisation and in innovation, I think it should only prove to be a good thing for overall food sovereignty and food security for Western Australia.
Just from a consumer perspective, could this investment help stabilise fruit prices and improve year-round access to locally grown produce?
It could do a bit. Most of the variations in supply are governed by the seasons and regional seasonality of the different areas. So it shouldn't impact it too much. But again, like, if there's a consistent supply and they're able to respond to the market and be agile enough, yeah, you could be able to see a more stabilisation of supply, which will flatten out the pricing market.
With this all happening, is it something that consumers and people in the industry would have expected from such a larger group to buy out some of these other producers?
Not really. You see it in many other parts of the marketplace where the larger guys, larger operations are able to invest into the marketplace, and they can invest more money and innovation into those areas where the smaller operators are obviously getting squeezed, finding it more difficult to survive under these type of conditions. So they've got an opportunity to exit, which is fine. But again, as I said, we'd still like to see small family-owned businesses survive. But we sort of see this as inevitable in some situations.
What are the main pressures facing WA growers right now? And do you think more private investments like this is part of the solution to long-term stability and regional jobs?
Yeah, it is part of the solution. The pressure really comes through the cost of compliance, input cost increases like water and electricity, very tight retail pricing where it's kept very low, and increased labour costs. So we all know that we should be eating five serves every day. A serve of vegetables is worth 65 cents. So it's an extremely cheap product to have on the plate, particularly during a cost of living crisis. So, something we should be investing more on as families, ensuring that we've got a healthy, nutritious meal on the table, and particularly at a very low cost.
CEO of Vegetables WA, Peter Spackman, speaking to Rachel Boothman about the news you heard here on the Country Hour yesterday, that the Galati Group has spent $14 million to purchase two of WA's southwest apple orchards. One of them is an orchard managed by Redland Fruit, owned by an investment firm, and the other one is Guadagnino Orchards, a family business, both of them based at Manjimup. And a spokesperson for the Guadagnino family, which has owned one of these orchards for decades now, says the sale was still being negotiated, as Tony was telling us yesterday, should settle next month. But they're very pleased their property would be taken over by the Galatis. And the spokesperson said, "We're very happy it's going to a good family. They have the same value as us. That's important to us." And you can read that story too. It's up online now. Just search Spud King ABC and you can read through some of the details of that deal. 6 minutes to one here on the Country Hour, and we'll head to Mount Barker right after this.
Hello, I'm Andy Park. Join me for The World Today. Does New York Mayor-elect Zoran Mamdani's win, together with a string of other Democrat victories, signal something of a fight back against the Trump White House? The US shutdown is now the longest on record. How are workers getting by? Are they leaving or hanging on? Australia's first Centre for Disease Control will open its doors in January after legislation passes in Parliament. And why is everyone seemingly hooked on the Lily Allen breakup album? Join me for The World Today.
3:30 to 1 here on the Country Hour. So The World Today not far away. We'll get to the 1 o'clock news and then The World Today to follow. Let's get to the markets now. And we're off to Mount Barker today. And there was 1,165 head of cattle penned for sale at Mount Barker today. And that's up 40 head from last week. Tracy Kilner's been at the sale today and she's got the details for you.
A good supply of heavy grown steers were on offer, selling to 408 cents, while yearling heifers dominated the yarding, with the quality Angus types reaching a top of 434 cents, with competition from feedlotters and grass-fed operations. New season weaners saw more weight offered with fluctuating results, and heavy cows lifted, selling to 326 cents a kilo. The heavyweight weaner steers sold for 392 to 450 cents and 412 to 486 cents for the lighter weights. Weaner heifers returned 360 to 442 cents for heavyweights and 330 to 384 cents for the lighter weights. Yearling steers sold for 396 to 460 cents, while the yearling heifers returned 326 to 434 cents a kilo. Grown steers weighing over 600 kilos made 370 to 378 cents, while the 500 to 600 kilo steers returned 380 to 408 cents, and lighter weights returned 360 to 438 cents a kilo. Grown heifers weighing over 540 kilos sold from 325 to 376 cents. Heavyweight cows sold from 280 to 326 cents. Medium weights made 296, and store cows were firm, selling from 200 to 272 cents a kilo. Heavy bulls were up, returning 264 to 308 cents. This has been Tracy Kilner for Meat and Livestock Australia's National Livestock Reporting Service.
Tracy, thank you for going through those details at Mount Barker today. The total yarding today, 1,165 head. That wraps up the livestock markets for this week. Tomorrow, being Friday, we'll see how the wool has been selling in the west and in the east with Justin Haydock around about this time tomorrow. It is a minute away from the news at one. Just repeating the top stories today, we've been talking about some of the wild weather over the last couple of days, the hail and the rain causing some widespread damage across the state's agricultural region. It looks like there's been some damage to the crops, even some sheep struck by lightning on one particular farm. But the rain certainly did come down, and we heard earlier that in some parts there was sort of around 80 mils of rain in sort of that Southern Cross area. So doing some damage to the crops there. We don't have a full assessment of the situation at this stage. It is pretty early, and hopefully the weather is going to be kind into next week when things do improve. The weather warms up a little bit and they can dry out and not too much damage. This on the text from John in Esperance. Can we get a gauge on the damage to the WA crop? Is it enough to reduce the quantity and quality of it? Farmers will have to make decisions on how grain merchants will react. Thank you for the text, John. Like I said, I think it's a little bit early, but we'll certainly be keeping an eye on the situation and report any details we can when they come to hand. Good to talk to you today in the ABC. Time for the news, 1 o'clock.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.